Sure, I will be happy to go first. My name is Liz Thompson. I am a PhD candidate right now, currently studying cannabinoid pharmacology in specific to concussion. And I am so happy to bring my PhD supervisor, Dr. Patrick Neary, on the show because you two are two of my most favorite scientists. So I'm just so happy to be in the same place at once with you, Jason, and Dr. Patrick Neary.
Okay, well, thanks, Liz. Maybe I don't even need to introduce myself now. And as Elizabeth said, I'm Patrick Neary. I'm a professor in kinesiology and health studies at the University of Regina. And I've been doing concussion research specifically for about the last 20 years. And over about the last 5 years is when my eyes have been opened up to the potential benefits of phytocannabinoids. And it's amazing that we have this endocannabinoid system, which I knew nothing about as a undergraduate, a graduate student, moving into my profession and over the last 25 years. And then finally, my eyes have been opened to, we have this beautiful plant on the earth that could be used for medicinal purposes.
We must work untiringly so that our children are obliged to learn the truth.
Curious About Cannabis is dedicated to providing reliable cannabis science education to anyone curious enough to learn. To get access to free courses and other educational resources, visit learn.cacpodcast.com and become a Curious About Cannabis member for free. The Curious About Cannabis book provides an incredible crash course in cannabis science through over 500 pages of content filled with photos, activities, science experiments, games, and more to help guide you through your personalized cannabis education journey. This book has become a trusted textbook in colleges and universities across North America and is absolutely perfect for serious learners as well as cannabis educators, bud tenders, clinicians, patients, and caregivers. And now, back to the show. Hey, everybody. This is Jason with Curious About Cannabis. Thanks so much for tuning in once again. So today we are continuing our series Train with Mary Jane, where we're exploring the intersection between athletics, sports injury, and cannabinoid science. And I'm joined once again today with Liz Thompson, and then also a very special guest, Dr. Patrick Neary. Thank you both so much for coming on the podcast. I'm really excited to have you both here and to really dive into a lot of science behind just what happens when these injuries happen. Where does this intersection between cannabinoids, the endocannabinoid system, and brain injuries occur? And I'm also fascinated to hear more about just the personal side of this story of getting involved in this NFL project that Liz kind of queued us up on in the last episode. So Dr. Neary, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show today.
Oh, Jason, my pleasure. And please call me Patrick.
Absolutely. So Patrick, tell me a little bit, we got Liz's kind of side of how she got involved in all of this in the last episode. So if you don't mind kind of starting on kind of your personal story a little bit, what's a little bit of your background, how you got into kind of focusing on the study of brain injury and all of the kind of internal mechanics that happen when these injuries occur? And then what was the kind of process like to get involved in this NFL project?
Yeah, so as I mentioned previously, Jason, I've been doing concussion research for about 20 years, and I actually had a graduate student, Carolyn Cote was her name, and she came to me one day and said, you know, have you got any equipment that can monitor the brain? I want to study hockey players. And I said, well, right away, that's a waste of time. Hockey players and brain activity. So we had a good chuckle about that. And I said, actually, I do. I said, I've got something called near-infrared spectroscopy, and it's an optical technique. And what it does is it shines light into the brain, and light in the near infrared range can actually penetrate the skin, the skull, and then into the cortex. So we use this for a project that we did back in Eastern Canada out of New Brunswick. And Caroline collected some really interesting and great data to look at what is actually happening in the brain when we have a concussion from an energy perspective, an oxygenation perspective. And then, of course, that then led me to continuing to look at concussion as my primary avenue of research. You know, we did baseline testing of all of the athletes when I arrived at the University of Regina, here in Regina, Saskatchewan. And then we would follow them up if they did get a concussion. And then about 5 years ago, I had a graduate student, Jokpal Singh. And Jokpal was very interested in cannabinoids and looking at medical cannabis. And a physician that we were working with at the time also said, hey, I've got these women who have had post-concussion syndrome for, you know, 6 months, 2 years, 3 years, and they're just not making any movement forward, no progression. Have you got any thoughts or ideas? And so, of course, Joe and I decided, well, let's go to the lab and we'll smoke a joint and then we'll figure out what's the best way to approach this. No, I'm kidding. We didn't actually smoke a joint in the lab. And so we said, well, why don't we use phytocannabinoids and we'll put them on a particular program and see whether or not it's actually anti-inflammatory and neuroprotective, you know, the CBD aspect, right, or the cannabidiol. And so we did a small project with four women with post-concussion syndrome. And you know, Jason, right off the bat, I need to tell you about one of the subjects in particular. And although it's anecdotal, I think it really illustrates the importance of looking at this type of research and the possible importance of CBD. This one individual, when she came to us, could only put together two or three or four words in a sentence. Oh, then wow. She had to think about what she needed to say next. Mm-hmm. By the end of the 8-week study of taking increasing doses of CBD, she was able to talk in full sentences. And, wow. And you know, that right alone is just a testimony to the fact that her brain was operating better after the introduction of the cannabinoids. And it was the only thing that she had changed. The other thing that we had noted as well is that there was an improvement in her blood pressure response. And then, of course, we used psychological questionnaires as well. And that showed an improvement in the anxiety, the depression type issues, and other aspects of psychological and emotional performance. So that was very compelling. You know, we started with an NF4, and then, of course, Elizabeth Thompson came into my life. Oh no. It was a nice April day. I was sitting on my back porch and sitting in the sun, and Elizabeth called and introduces herself and tells me what she wants to do with her life. And I said, that's a long lifetime in order to do all of that. So we began chatting, and Elizabeth, short story is that she became a graduate student. And then we've had all of these ideas, and we just sort of play off of each other and then discuss science and cannabinoids and, you know, medical cannabis, et cetera. And so that's how that all got started. And then Elizabeth says to me one day, Neri, look at this. The NFL is giving out money for cannabinoid research and pain management. And I said, well, Elizabeth, I know dick all about pain management, but I do know a lot about concussion. Let me think about this. So, you know, I went away for a couple of days and I responded to Elizabeth and I said, yeah, we're going to apply for this. And then it was only a 5-page proposal. And I thought, geez, I've never written a grant to get money in just five pages. And yeah. I thought, this is going to be a piece of cake. So anyway, as I started to put this this grant together, it became very obvious. And I'm an integrative physiological scientist. So I look at the body, the human body, from an exercise physiological perspective, very integratively. So you got to integrate the brain. Yeah. So that's what a concussion is. But you got to integrate the heart as well. You got to know what the hormonal and the blood system is doing. So you got to look at the whole body. So then as I started to put this grant together and bouncing ideas off of other professionals, I realized that I needed a team behind me in order to answer the questions that we're trying to answer. Are phytocannabinoids, are they beneficial in some way, shape, or form for those that have concussions or who have had concussions and or for pain management? And of course, the whole advertisement that came out from the NFL at that time is they were very interested in the pain management and and the potential to get athletes, both current and former athletes, off of opioids or prescription medications. So that's how that all started. And then, of course, we've got exercise physiologists. We've got a cerebrovascular physiologist. We've got a cardiologist, a pediatric neurologist that's going to do our imaging work. We've got pharmacokineticists. And of course, graduate students were a huge part of this. We have a pain specialist as well, sports psychologist. So we've got a wonderful team behind us in order to get started and look at this.
Yeah, one thing I love about this project is, you know, how it's evolved into this network of different kind of groups of people that are tackling this from different angles. And I love the attention to the integrative piece of all of this, that you're acknowledging that we could be measuring one thing, but if we're not measuring these other things, we could be missing a whole big, you know, piece of the narrative of what's going on here and how it all is interconnected. And it certainly all is interconnected. And that's something I kind of wanted to get into for our listeners as we get into some of the science. Can you start to break down, you know, physiologically and on like a, on a molecular biology level, what happens when someone has a concussion?
Okay, yeah, that, you know, Jason, that's a great question to get started. And at a sort of a metabolic level and molecular level, so we have this what's called a neurometabolic cascade. And metabolism is adversely affected. And what we start to do is we start to rely on what we call glycolytic metabolism. We're using glucose predominantly. And of course, the brain uses glucose, but the increase in glycolysis or glycogen breakdown and glucose breakdown for the brain is really increased. And at the same time, there's also big changes that are happening in some of the chemistry, you know, things such as calcium, and Elizabeth can talk to some of this as well. There's a big increase in calcium levels, which can be a bad thing. You know, it's helpful in the body in so many different ways. And there's also big increases in lactic acid. There's also increases in hydrogen ions. There's also increases in potassium levels. And if we get too much of those, it puts our nervous system out of balance, because there is a chemical balance in the brain between sodium and potassium and calcium and hydrogen. And it's a very, very fine balance. And when that's put out, and that's what happens when you do get a concussion, and to define a concussion for our listeners, you know, it's the movement of the brain inside the skull. All right, that's what a concussion is. And you can either get that through a whiplash, and you don't need to hit your head, or you can get it through a shearing motion when you're moving your head side to side. And for those sport fans, hockey players in particular, that's what happened to Sidney Crosby. He was hit on the shoulder, all right? And this was back in, Elizabeth will have to help me out, I think 2010, 2011. And it whipped his head sideways, and that created a shearing motion.
Yeah.
And then a few days later, he was hit against the boards, and his head actually then hit. So you can get a concussion without hitting your head, and that's important for our listeners to understand. And in that shearing motion, then, of course, what's happening is we're starting to pull apart those neurons, those nerve cells that are creating those action potentials to elicit changes within our body.
There's also, just to add to that, additionally, because that was all what is affected in the neuron, but you also have to remember there's microglia surrounding the neuron. And so when the neurons get perturbed, the microglia also go into, they have a surveillance state, which is when your body, you know, when your brain is healthy and just homeostasis is balanced, the microglia are the resident immune cells of your brain. So they're patrolling. But as soon as they get perturbed, they go into a pro-inflammatory state. Their morphology changes and everything that they're doing goes pro-inflammatory. So they, in addition to the neurons being perturbed, the microglia get perturbed too. And we know that the CB2 receptor is upregulated on the microglia when they're under pressure like that. And we know that to be the common denominator in most neurodegenerative disorders is the upregulation and the perturbation of the microglia as well, which used to be just disregarded and, you know, waste of brain tissue. Well, actually, it turns out they're very useful. Like, we were throwing them away when we were doing, you know, and they
So it's funny how we tend to do that.
Right. Like, not really looking at, but again, the whole broad spectrum. And that's the point. Like, nothing is a waste in any part of your body. And again, like you said, Jason, that's why this project is so exciting, because it's looking at so many different things. And to me, and Patrick, you know, hit on it with concussion, but also the endocannabinoid system. Really, the endocannabinoid system is the crossing of your mind and your body. It is the intersection of where they meet, and what effects in one have an effect in the other. And when you start looking at the endocannabinoid system and changes that happen in that system, the output could be either mental or it could be physical. And so it's really a powerful place where you could play around with the things that are going on. But concussion, we know, personality changes, you know, they have emotional changes. There's a lot of changes that are an output, that are the outcome of a physiological change. So just to add to that.
And what about, you know, because we're talking about inflammatory actions and all that sort of thing, what about immunological changes? So moving kind of, you know, the systems are all interconnected, but moving away from the brain per se, kind of into the rest of the body. How does a brain injury affect someone's immune response and that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And again, as we talked about earlier, there's this integrative physiological systems that we want to look at. And certainly one of the things that we're going to look at is immune biomarkers. So what's happening to things such as interleukin 6? You know, it's a biomarker that we use for the immune system. And then there's others that we're looking at as well. So we're going to be drawing blood. And we've actually, and the exciting thing is that we have Health Canada approval, all right, as well as we have all of our ethics. And it's taken a while. It's taken a bit of time, I must say. But now we've actually drawing blood today. We've got three athletes that have already started. We've already got over 20 athletes who have signed up for our very first project. And I can go into more detail in a bit, but certainly we are going to be collecting these different immunomarkers in the blood, in addition to just general blood biochemistry. And again, as we mentioned, you know, and Elizabeth, you know, eloquently stated the effects on our microglial cells and how important they are. And so we're going to be taking a look at all of this. And something that I did forget to mention when I was listing our cast of experts on this is we're also going to look at the neurophysiology, where we're going to be using something called transcranial magnetic stimulation.
Oh, nice. So okay.
We're going to use a coil, a magnetic coil on their head to change some of the GABAergic receptor input. And so these are some of the neurochemical changes. And we want to see what are the effects of having CBD on some of these different neurophysiological indices. So that's the exciting part. So yes, the immune system is going to be a big part of it. And we're collecting blood samples for that. Another thing that we're also going to do, and sorry to sort of ramble on here and stop.
No, this is great. I'm loving it. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, is we're going to collect saliva samples and we're going to analyze that for their DNA to see how potentially they may be able to respond metabolically to the cannabinoids. So it's another big part of this project. And there's a company in Canada and the United States as well called My Next Health. And My Next Health are helping to provide some in-kind funding for this. And then we're going to have the saliva analyzed for their genetics. So it's going to be a really interesting aspect of it.
Well, and it's interesting too to think about, like when you were talking about the microglial cells, one thing that popped in my head was, you know, that the data that you collect under this project, it's going to have implications well beyond sports mm-hmm. and athletics. Like I think about Alzheimer's and some of the, you know, pathophysiology related to that, yeah. among other things too, but MS, when we start talking about, you know, these effects on these different components of neurons and the similarities between different conditions and what you see in a post-traumatic brain injury situation as well. I find that really fascinating. And I hope our listeners clue into that, that the data from this goes well beyond the immediate focus.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Jason, if I can add also, I'm so thankful and very, very humble that we've got this money from the NFL. And I think it's going to have a trickle down effect to those children, all right, that are playing sports in arenas and soccer fields and, you know, in gymnasiums and swimming pools and whatever, on the playground even. Yeah. All right. So I really believe it's going to have this trickle down effect. And it also makes me think about I had the very good fortune of meeting Dr. Lester Grinspoon.
Great.
Yeah, so you're probably aware of Lester. They've got a pot plant named after him as well. Grinspoon.
What? That's right.
Yeah, and actually it was my son Seamus who introduced me to Lester, because Lester back in about 2016, and he was at a Harvard psychiatrist, he sent a letter, an open letter, to Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, to say, it is criminal that you're not allowing your football players to smoke pot. Right? Yeah. That's basically what the letter said, and you can look it up and it's there. And what Lester was trying to say is that the fact that the cannabinoids, the phytocannabinoids in this plant, are neuroprotective, they're anti-inflammatory. Yeah. All right. They've got pain reducing abilities. So that was interesting. And so Seamus sent me this letter and I read it and I thought, wow, I want to talk to this guy. So then I looked him up and somehow I was able to get his email. And I don't even remember how I did that. I fired him off an email, not even thinking that he was going to get back to me. Like, who am I?
Right. Yeah.
Some guy in Saskatchewan, you know, in Canada, that, you know, is interested in looking at this. The next morning, I get this email and said, here's my phone number. Call me. So,
wow.
So then I had just a wonderful talk with Lester. I had the great fortune also of meeting him in Boston when I was there for a conference. I visited him at his house and we had just a wonderful a conversation. And I said, oh, Lester, I'm wanting to do 10 years of research with you. But I said, I realize you're the same age as my dad. And yeah. So I'm not sure how this is going to work out. Unfortunately, Lester's now passed on and has left a great legacy. You know, he came out in the 60s and 70s with a couple of books on medical marijuana, and they were called Medical Marijuana. And so it was really him that really started to open my eyes. And I, as I said, you know, about whatever it was. So it was back in 2016. Geez, so a little bit more than 5 years ago now.
Yeah, that's incredible. You had that opportunity. Because I was going to point out, that was right towards the end there. I've had the chance to virtually meet with Peter, his son.
Yes.
But I never had a chance to meet with Lester. But Lester was, his work was one of the things that really got me on the path that I'm on as well, just reading his books. And I remember seeing some features of him in some documentaries and hearing him explain, you know, from that kind of perspective from psychiatry and everything, the implications of cannabinoids. I remember I was probably 14 years old at the time. And that was, you know, really made some things click for me. So I definitely appreciate that opportunity you had. That's really amazing that you got to connect with him. And and to have those conversations. I'd love to be a fly on the wall for that. Yeah. That's great.
It really was. It was a great meeting, and I'm so thankful that he opened his doors, and we did. We had great chats about all sorts of stuff. And as you just said, his son also has gone on to medicine and is also in this area as well.
Yeah. And so thinking about the implications of the research, and the different things that this can connect to. When some people hear
Jason,
about...
if I can stop you just for a second.
Yep.
Just because it that's made, this sort of rant that I went on about Lester. All right. One of the things that Lester left with me in our meeting, he said that, one of my dreams is to see the day when mom and dad say to Sally and Johnny, take your phytocannabinoids and go out and play. Just like the vitamins, yes. The multivitamins right. We used to take. There they are sitting on the table. All right. Yeah. Go take those and go out and play. That was his dream. And one of the things that I'm hoping that we'll be able to do as well is to be able to illustrate that so that our parents and future parents will have this knowledge and will take this this idea, the stigma away about cannabinoids are and how they can be helpful. And of course, you're very, very well aware of Charlotte's Web, right? And Charlotte, how she had over 300 epileptic seizures in a week. Yep. And it went from 300 down to one or two. When you're having 40 a day and now you're down to none because you're keeping this certain amount. And anecdotally, but still, we've got projects that are coming out. My colleagues who are also co-supervising Elizabeth, Jane Elkhorn and Robert LaPrairie up at the University of Saskatchewan, they've done these projects to look at epilepsy and the importance and the benefits of CBD in particular and different concentrations. And so that's what this project's about. We're hoping to use, that the funding that we've so greatly appreciate from the NFL to have this trickle-down effect.
I wish I would have been able to meet Lester Grinspoon. He was like tight with Carl Sagan, the astronaut.
Well, that's who introduced him to Smoking Pot.
Yes, and Carl Sagan published a bunch of books too, but he used a pen name, I think. Like he didn't put Carl Sagan as the author instead of Carl Sagan. I think he had like a ghostwriter name, but he had him and then Lester and Carl and then read some of Lester's things saying like, well, as Peter Grinspoon said, growing up, he would see Carl Sagan with his dad in the living room and they were always having highly intellectual conversations, smoking pot all day long. And so he knew, that it's like, you can use this and not, and still be highly, highly intelligent. I mean, Carl Sagan, come on, that guy's one of the most intelligent people out there. And he, so again, it's the perspective and the stigma that, I think that guys like him are amazing because they're so intelligent. And I think when people like you two, you hear him say it, and then it's like, well, there's got to be something to it. If somebody as intelligent as Lester Grinspoon or Carl Sagan are saying it to be true, then, I mean, these are not low level. These are highly, highly intelligent people to... unfortunately, there's still the stigma part that now we have to, and I think the commercial market just makes that even, that's just making it harder to go through, but.
Well, that's actually something I wanted to ask you both about. How has stigma affected your work in this project? Have you run into any issues or resistance or any funny comments from people that are like, oh, y'all are studying the cannabis stuff with athletes and kind of, I don't know. I know I still to this day, despite how open I am about everything I do, still get ridiculous comments and jokes and the usual stuff. So what's been your experience with stigma and kind of that side of cannabis research that I think a lot of researchers don't talk too much about?
Yeah, you know, Jason, I'm going to talk from the Canadian perspective, and I know Elizabeth can talk from the American perspective because that's where she is. So in Canada, it's a bit more open-minded because we now have legalized marijuana in the country, so it's federally regulated and it's open. You know, back to October the 17th, 2017, I think it
that's
is.
That's right. Yeah. Years.
Yeah. And so in Canada, it seems to be a bit more open-minded that way, although there's still a lot of stigma around it, especially parents, you know, they're concerned about it. and trying to get them to understand that, you know, cannabidiol or CBD, all right, is non-intoxicating. And, you know, it does have a psychoactive effect, but it's non-intoxicating. It's not like the THC that gives you the high. Mm-hmm. So there's still a bit of that stigma, but it still seems to be a bit more or much easier to talk to people about the beneficial effects of the CBD. And so I think people are a little bit more open-minded.
What's your experience, Liz?
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. In Canada, it's a lot more because when we put the Cannabis Act in 2018, people already started thinking about it. And also one of the places our government really prioritized at that time, and the approach was a harm reduction approach, but it was still education. And so they were, you know, you would now be driving and the street signs up on the, you know, they were talking about don't use cannabis and drive and don't, you know, so they were making an attempt to do harm reduction education, which then by proxy does normalize the idea that, okay, this is going to be used like alcohol. And this is like, so I think kids coming up now, starting in 2018, have a different perspective where it's like a normal thing. You know, some dads drink beer, some dads use cannabis, and it's just very normal there. But in the US, there is, and again, depending on what state you live in, because I lived in California for a while, well, you might as well be in Canada there. It's very normalized. It's no big deal. Now I'm in the East. Well, and I'm sure, Jason, you as well in the South. Like, I mean, they're years behind, and having conversations with people in the US, it all comes down to liability and the law, because cannabis is still technically Schedule One. It is a narcotic. And so even when I approach people just asking them for survey information or to be able to interview them, their concern is the liability because it is technically a narcotic. And so if you think of like the, you know, the vet military doctors, they can't even discuss cannabis with their veteran patients because they could potentially lose their license.
That's
because it's something federally, it is not allowed. And so I find in the US for sure there's a difference. There's definitely a difference. And I don't even know if it's necessarily as much stigma as it is. There's definitely stigma, but when you look at the medical profession, it is liability. And they will say as much. It's about the liability of what, you know, we're discussing. But for sure, people, because it's misunderstood, right? In the States. And people don't understand it. I think in Canada, there's definitely a better understanding, and people have been around more people that have used it and realized that what you think is a person that uses cannabis, and if you're a person that has that stigma, the reality of what people look like that use cannabis, they are doctors, they are lawyers, they are first responders, they are teachers, they are very educated people. Like, it, you know, it's not the stereotypical stoner that people think it is. It's, and I think in Canada, they have a better recognition of that, that it's like, oh yeah, well, you know, they know people that use it, and those people are not the stereotype that they had in their mind. So I think in Canada, for sure, they're ahead on getting past the stigma. Some.
It's always little bits to get over, but yeah, you're definitely spot on in terms of like, when I lived in Oregon, it was extremely normalized, and you had the billboards talking about different things around harm reduction. The generations of kids that were growing up that, you know, at the time, let's see, Oregon went fully recreational in 2016, I believe. And all of the kids that I was around, because when I was in grad school, I was doing a lot of education with kids and meeting their parents and stuff, and the kids did not care about cannabis at all. A lot of them even viewed it as kind of annoying, just like all the attention on it and that their parents were involved in it and, you know, all this stuff. They were just kind of like, ugh, whatever. And I thought that was really fascinating. And then fast forward, I moved back to my home state of Mississippi, and it's like going back in time 25 years. And, you know, mm-hmm. it's the complete opposite. And I've been working in a dispensary doing education and like consulting with patients and things. And so many of them are very much like, I don't ever want anyone to see me going into a dispensary. I can't smell like it. Like, no one needs to know that I'm doing this, you know, sort of thing. The stigma is like extremely strong, very taboo still. And even though, according to the statistics we have, about 3/4 of the population of Mississippi support medical cannabis and using cannabis. So everyone carries this weight around with them that, from my perspective, like, you know, they don't know that their neighbors are also using cannabis and that their doctor's also using cannabis. And, you know,
yeah.
So it's kind of just, they just haven't kind of been bold enough to show, but like, yes, I'm a cannabis user too. So it is, it's very interesting how you can have these very different cultures relatively close to each other. You know, I mean, in the US, we're talking state to state and then Canada right there. And it's just, and Mexico too. Mexico has been working on changing their laws and is going through a big transition as well. And so they have kind of similar issues going on there too. So it is an interesting kind of mosaic of kind of cultural situations around cannabis and cannabis use. And I know one of the big issues of kind of where this intersects with medicine is a lot of people are like scared to talk to their doctors about their cannabis use or scared to bring up the idea, you know, can I use CBD for this or that? And as Liz is pointing out, like there's the issue of liability that the doctors almost don't even want to get into the conversation because of what it could mean for losing their license or losing insurance coverage or anything like that.
Also, just on that note quickly, mm-hmm. they're also very undereducated. They don't have the answers that the patients are coming to them. And I think statistically, even in Canada, it was at the last survey that we did in our country, 96% of physicians had been approached by their patients about cannabinoid therapy. Like 96%, find me something else. That's almost 100% of physicians. And when you look at the amount of education that's provided in medical school, 7% of them cover, you know, maybe an hour. It's similar to nutrition, right? It's just not covered in their curriculum because it's not something, you know, but look at how powerful proper nutrition is. You can control so much in your body with correct nutrition, and they don't teach it in medical school because, again, like our last episode, we were saying medicine is different than mechanisms. Physiology really looks at like what Patrick was looking at. As a good physiologist, you would never put something in a little tiny circle like that because you know the systems are huge, right? And the endocannabinoid system is awesome because the crosstalk, it is a neuromodulator, but it is also an immunomodulator. So it modulates your immune system and it modulates your neurons. And so the crosstalk between the neuromodulation and the immunomodulation, the language is usually calcium. And so when you can get in there and use cannabinoids to really affect that, you can affect so many things. Your immune system is everything, and your neurons is everything, and this one system covers it all, right? So a good physiologist understands you are an ecosystem. Like, you are not one being.
That's right.
Just like cannabis is not one thing either. Cannabis is 500 bioactive molecules. Like, you have to start looking at things in a larger scope. And I think in North American medicine, we've really got reductionistic, and that's done a bit of damage as far as seeing a human body for everything that it is, which includes the mental part. And, and in concussion, it affects everything. Your mental, your physical balance, like everything, you really see everything that works together. And it is an immune system thing too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's really great. And this touches on, you know, exactly what we were talking about before, like all of this integrative aspect and how this all connects together. And one of the things I wanted to get into in like the last about 15 minutes or so, I wanted to explore, you know, so we've talked a little bit about some of the mechanisms behind what kind of goes awry when a traumatic brain injury happens. And we've talked a little bit about the intersections of the endocannabinoid system, I'm really glad you pointed out that the body is an ecosystem, the endocannabinoid system, it's not all the same, you know, it's different everywhere. So maybe in the last 10 minutes or so, I want to unpack a little bit of, well, first of all, I wanted to try to talk about some of the mechanisms behind like the long-term effects of these injuries. Because we sort of have the acute stuff that I think most people think about, you know, like what happens in the moment of injury in that first 24 or 48 hours or so of a concussion. A lot of people, you know, think about that. But then, as Liz and I talked about in the last episode, there are things that happen years, decades down the road that stem from that injury. And I want to kind of talk about where, one, what are some of those effects and how does that intersect with the endocannabinoid system? And finally, before we close, I wanted to get both of you to kind of share some feedback regarding what you kind of like your hypotheses in a way, like kind of what you are speculating that you might find or some of these mechanisms that you kind of think might be at play that you're hoping to explore. And then that'll kind of segue us into the next episode that we get into where we start to dive into those other aspects of this network of these pieces that really bring together this full narrative. So that was a big ramble to say. Let's first talk about these long-term effects. You know, when someone has a concussion, when we get past, let's say, those first few days, what is changing in the body long-term? And what are some more of those intersections with the endocannabinoid system?
Yeah. So Jason, I'll get started and then I'll get Elizabeth just to add in as well.
Perfect.
So the whole focus, and you asked, you know, what we think is going to happen long term and what our hypotheses are, is that our very first study that we're doing right now currently and it's running is we want to see how much CBD that athletes can actually take safely. And we're using what's called a dose escalation study. So we're increasing their dosage every 2 weeks. And then, of course, as I mentioned, we've got this team behind us that we're monitoring our athletes every 2 weeks. So they start with 5 milligrams per kg of body mass. And then that's bumped up to 10, 15, 20, 25, and up to 30, potentially, if they can actually take that amount. So right now, we do know that the CBD in particular is anti-inflammatory and neuroprotective, but we don't know what the concentration is that you need or Elizabeth needs or I need or anybody out there. So we're going to take a look at that specifically to see, is there some sort of an optimal dose? Is there a minimum dose that they can be taking safely that we can then apply that to a sport? We can apply that to the kids on the playground. To say that, you know, potentially here's something that could be used to either reduce or mitigate the concurrence or the occurrence of concussion and or the symptoms of that. So once this project is completed, then the plan is to then take that and put that into a season of football. And we're going to use our university level athletes, and they'll take a certain concentration of CBD. And, you know, sake of argument, let's say it's 2000 milligrams. Mm-hmm. And just for the listeners to get some perspective of that, when you have a little tincture of CBD in a bottle, it's usually 30 milligrams in a mil.
Yeah,
all right.
That's right.
We might be we're going to be taking some of these players up to 3,000 and 4,000 milligrams in a day to see what the body can safely handle. And so then we're going to take that sort of proposed amount and then see how that what happens when we put that into a football season. So there will be a group that will be on the CBD, the cannabidiol, and there will be a group that will be on the placebo. And then halfway through the season, we're going to switch them over and we're going to use this crossover design so that everybody will get placebo, everybody will get CBD, and we're going to take a look to see the occurrences of concussion, the extent of it, the physiology of what's going on, because again, we're continuing to monitor, you know, cardiac and cerebrovascular changes, the neurophysiological changes, the psychological changes. So we're going to monitor all of that. And then thereafter, we're going to do our third study. And the third study is to actually look at the pain management and an opioid situation and whether or not we can control pain with CBD. And this is where we're going to start to introduce a bit of THC as well, small amounts. And we do know that there is this synergistic effect, the entourage effect. Right. All right, with CBD and THC, and of course, you know, Elizabeth will talk about, you know, some of the other chemicals that are found in the plant, the terpenes, all right, and the importance of those. And so the idea is to take people who are either post-concussion syndrome, who are fighting with pain management issues, who are on prescription medications, and then start them on a regime of CBD, and then they'll move into a CBD and a THC. Then they'll move into maybe just the THC. Then they'll move into the placebo. So with our third study, all of us would be getting all of the different interventions, but you'd be on it for 30 days. Okay, and Elizabeth will be on something different for 30 days. I would be as well. And then we would switch it around. We'll randomize it, so that all of us get all of the interventions and in the same individual. And that's the strongest design. And in between each of those interventions, we're going to do a washout period to wash out the system. And then we'll bring them back. And then we're hoping that we'll be able to show that potentially that CBD and a tiny bit of THC might be the best one for people to use. And therefore, now we can help to educate, we can help to reduce that stigma of these different components. And as you know, with Charlotte's Web as well, it was a 20-to-1 or 22
That's right,
to 1 CBD to THC. And again, the THC, it helps with a synergistic effect. And Elizabeth can explain some of the mechanisms behind that related to CB1 and CB2 receptors and what's going on with our, you know, the endocannabinoid system and the different enzymes that are actually produced out of that get this whole flow of a system going. Yeah. So in a nutshell, that's where we're headed. We've hypothesized that this CBD will be beneficial, will be anti-inflammatory and neuroprotective. And then we're hypothesizing likewise that the addition of some THC will help to control with pain management, and maybe even get these athletes and former athletes off of prescription medications and opioids. Yeah.
That's really cool. I'm glad to, to hear how extensive this is, that you're looking at different formulations, different dosing schedules, all of that sort of thing. Again, that's one reason why I'm so excited to cover this story, because there's so much data that's going to come out of this. I mean, how long is it projected that all in all, for this whole project with everything involved, how long do you expect it will take to collect all of that data and begin to kind of wrap our minds around it?
Yeah, I'll start, and I know Elizabeth will add in as well. You know, the project was supposed to be 3 years total.
Yeah,
and we're 2 years into it. But the way we designed it is that the very first study, which we're doing right now, the dose escalation, needs to be done first. The other two studies can be done simultaneous. And so right now, Jason, we're actually our postdoc student, Jokpal Singh, is putting together the second and third Health Canada application. So our idea is that we're going to be running these studies, that study two and study three, simultaneous. So within a year's period, within a year and a half, we are going to have all of the data collected that we need, or at least we believe that we need in the next year and a half. But it's designed designed in such a way that the data and the information is going to be coming out right away. And so by the summertime, midway through the summer, the end of the summer, we're going to already start producing some of these papers to show what's the cerebrovascular effect, what's the cardiovascular effect. So one of the protocols that we use is the toughest part of this one protocol is lying down, all right, and staying awake for 30 minutes. so that's the struggle, trying to keep our athletes awake, because we need the 30 minutes of baseline data. Mm-hmm. One of the other exciting things from a molecular perspective is we're looking at the frequencies at which the different systems are operating in. So what is the cardiac frequency? What's the respiratory frequency? All the way down to the mitochondria. And these were producing the ATP, all right, for the energy needed to rehab the brain and to get us off and prevent the pain and control pain management. So that protocol is really important in order to understand what is happening all the way down this frequency continuum. And then how does CBD or THC affect that? Yeah. So that those are sort of the nitty gritties about it. And again, I'll let Elizabeth add to this as well on the very important research she's doing, looking at the educational model out of all of this and educating our physicians and our athletes as well. So many athletes have these questions and they think they know what they're doing, but what is the correct therapy?
Well, sorry, Liz, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Nope. Oh, I was just going to say it's exactly like Patrick said, getting right down to the ATP and the cellular respiration part. That really is the point, is you have to get all the way down to that. And so to your first question about what are the molecular mechanisms that are driving the long-term bad outcomes from concussion, it is that. It is the secondary metabolic effects that are what, so you have your immediate impact, which is that acute, the primary injury and concussion, but the secondary injury, which are the cellular, the metabolic, the biochemical, those are the things that drive the long-term problems. And so if you think about how your endocannabinoid system works in a concussion, you start over-secreting excitatory glutamate, which is an excitatory neurotransmitter. And if everything is perfectly in place, your endocannabinoids will be secreted and they go retrograde. They hit the CB1 receptor and you can calm that down and you'll sort of stop producing so much neuroexcitatory glutamate, right? And then also your microglia got, freaked out. And so they're going pro-inflammatory. And then when you secrete your endocannabinoids, those endocannabinoids go over to your microglia as well to hit the CB2 receptors and calm them down and put them back into an anti-inflammatory state, as well as the astrocytes. So your astrocytes are also responsible for the metabolism of the neurons and providing energy. And your astrocytes actually use the lactate as an energy source that are being, so when your neurons are firing and they're going anaerobic almost and they're producing lactate, those astrocytes can use the lactate as an energy source, which then is communication about what is happening in the brain under those energy systems, right? So when you think about the long-term problems, if that whole system, everything I just described, didn't get calmed down, if you didn't secrete the endocannabinoids, if you didn't hit the CB1 receptor to calm that down, that's where we can come in with phytocannabinoids to hit that same receptor, and it causes the same downstream effects of reducing the excitatory neurotransmitter release, right? Also, so CBD itself, because it can inhibit the FA enzyme, which is what degrades your natural anandamide, we can create an abundance or an increase in natural anandamide, which will then hit those receptors that need to happen to calm everything down. So typically the long-term things that are happening 5, 10, 15 years down the road as a result of a concussion that happened years ago is because none of that stuff got put back in place. Yeah. And so things are still misfiring. And then right down to the level of the ATP, if those cells aren't able to get energy correctly using oxygen and glucose correctly, if they're in an anaerobic state, it's like when your quads burn, when you're sprinting and you go anaerobic, you feel your quads. That is the same lactate that is happening in your brain. Your brain is going anaerobic, right? And so that's not the optimal energy system for anybody's brain. And so you can use cannabinoids to sort of reset everything and hopefully rebalance it to where you go back into oxidative phosphorylation, where you can start to create ATP correctly without the lactate, without that. And then you get into more of what Patrick looks at too. And Jason, you referred to your peripheral system, because your autonomic nervous system is also involved in that. And so when things are off, and Patrick can see it in, you know, heart rate variability, when these things happen in your brain and your brain is going, you know, something's offset, your autonomic nervous system, which is part of your peripheral nervous system, which is your sympathetic and parasympathetic systems, if you get stuck, if those things are freaking out and they're stuck freaking out, you're in a sympathetic system and your vagal nerve just can't get online to calm everything down, right? Yeah. That's where cannabinoids, CBD, really can come in and help with the inhibitory pathways, which are where you can start to, the concussion has the gas pedal down on everything. Right. It's freaking out, right?
Yep.
You can come in with CBD and really increase the inhibitory pathways, which are the brakes, and you can put the brakes on and get everything to calm down and really get it back in check to where it can start to metabolize energy correctly and no longer have a metabolic crisis in your brain, which is, concussion is a metabolic crisis in your brain. Yeah. And there's things we can do inside the skull to help with that metabolic crisis.
And this, and Jason, everything that Elizabeth just said, she's just put into a paper and has just submitted the publication.
Excellent.
And so you were asking about when this information is going to be coming out. So you know, Elizabeth has just submitted this paper, we're anticipating, you know, positive responses in regard to this information. So that's one of the first papers we've got out.
That's awesome. That's really great news. And something, Liz, that you were describing that I think highlights the role of THC in all of this and gets to some of the some of your hypotheses about the ratios and, you know, possible outcomes. When we start getting all the way down to ATP and we're talking about the mitochondria, there are mitochondrial CB1 receptors.
Yeah,
there are.
Mm-hmm. And there are. So there is a role for THC and anandamide and 2-AG and these compounds that have this affinity for CB1 receptors to work on that energy balance very directly at the core. And we can also talk about like PPARs, getting into the nucleus of the cells and actually changing how transcription occurs and things like that.
Epigenetics.
I think people really underestimate the power that cannabinoids have to affect things on that very deep foundational molecular level. That's where things get super fascinating to me, because even just how cells transport these molecules across these different barriers to get there is fascinating. You know, how to get to the mitochondria, how to get to those PPARs. There is so many variables involved, and so a big piece of the puzzle in endocannabinoid research and science and stuff is how do we modulate these things in the way, like, to support the cannabinoids to do what they need to do? Are there other things that kind of have to be tended to so that all of the different dependencies, the transport proteins, all of these different things are all kind of in line so that can all kind of hum and do what it needs to do?
And together too is the thing, is it is an entire symphony of molecules. Yes. And we saw what happened with rimonabant when we decided that it was going to be a good idea to antagonize the CB1 receptor. And again, it's a complete display of really the cross section between your mind and your body, because rimonabant was approved as a weight loss medication because it blocked, the thinking was, well, THC causes the munchies, so let's reverse that. And if THC is an agonist at the CB1, then let's make an antagonist and it would like do the reverse munchies. It would be no munchies. So they antagonized it. It was an awesome weight loss medication. And I believe because it was getting into the bioenergetics of the cell, and I think it was using fat as a fuel source, and that's what they were able to do. So yes, physically, it did make a change. The reason why it was pulled off the shelf was because it increased suicidal ideations through the roof and people were killing themselves. So it's like, you can't do one without the other. Yeah. And it wasn't kept in mind. This truly, that's why these are such powerful molecules, because look what happened there. It's such a display that we need to respect that. And we need to respect all the different things you said, the enzymes, the receptors, the shuttles, there's just so much that goes into it that you know, that was a lesson. Like, you have to be careful. You can't just block something, you know, losing 10 pounds, but you're going to kill yourself. Like, not really, not a good trade-off, you know?
The risk-benefit analysis doesn't quite shake out.
Exactly, right? And you see that with a lot of medications because they're monomolecular approaches, right? They hit one target, and that's typical in pharmacology and pharmaceuticals. It's hitting one target. Cannabinoids have a way of, you know, if you think of CBD, I think at the last reporting, it was like 62 different receptors that it interacts with in some way. And so, but it has a way of doing that, that it's not, it doesn't really get involved when, you know, the easiest example is when you think of GI tract issues where, you know, your GI is inflamed and the same thing is happening in the brain, but it's easier for people to conceptualize when there's an aggravation. Those receptors upregulate. And so in your brain, when you're concussed, you have an upregulation of CB2 receptors. So there's more little receptor mouths waiting to be fed, right? And so if there's not an additional amount of receptors there, then nothing's happening. You know, it's not going to affect anything. But if it's inflamed, now you have all of these receptors just waiting to be hit. And so it really is an amazing bioactive component for things that are in a state of inflammation and in a pathological state, which we also have to remember is different than tissue that is not in a pathological state. A concussed brain is different. The metabolic, you know, the metabolism is different, the rate, the amount of receptors that are there. And so looking at the output and the outcome from someone who is currently concussed will look different. Their microglia have much more CB2 receptors. And that is one of the things when you look at microglia and the long-term neurodegenerative disorders, that is the one place that it is believed and in research, you know, is pointing to, that is the common denominator between all neurodegenerative disorders is the perturbation of the microglia, and it's not getting pulled back. And that is your immune system. That is the immune system in your brain. And that goes, you know, to, but globally, the global spectrum of your body, that applies to everything. You know, your immune system is always working and changing, and that's your autonomic nervous system, right? It is really part of that to be aware of what's around you and what's going on. So when things aren't rebalanced, but the plant has an amazing way because the plant is also a living thing. It had to balance itself to be grown. So it balanced its cannabinoid ratios in accordance to its environment. That's why, you know, as much as we try to push the THC amount higher and higher, well, you're losing other cannabinoids in other places, right? And so it is a living being also, you know, and so things are balancing itself there in accordance to sun and water and wind, and, you know, people are no different. It, it's all a system.
No, no, that's exactly right. And, you know, in a great example with the plant as breeders using, you know, DNA monitoring technology and stuff as they try to, you know, turn off certain genes that might help with, let's say, powdery mildew resistance or something like that. They find that, oh, that also is influencing different cannabinoid synthase genes and things. And there's some connections between these we didn't realize. And, so, it, you know, there's example upon example of lessons to be learned from trying to think we know more than we do because we've got this little sliver of the picture. And then we're like, OK, press that button. And things don't always quite go the way that we expect. And that's why it's great to see, you know, folks like yourselves that are coming to research with, you know, an appropriate amount of humility of like, we have a lot to look at. We're not going to make a lot of assumptions. We have some good ideas of what we're likely to see, based on, you know, what's been done already and what we understand, but, you know, recognizing that this is all interconnected, that, you know, this is kind of a stepping stone for future research as well, that it's all, it all plays a part. That's always really great to see because not all scientists are humble and some are quite arrogant. It's great to see a group like yourselves that are approaching this with respect for the plant, respect for the athletes and their experiences, you know, that, that bit of humility to say like, we don't quite know, but we're going to gather all of this information and see what it tells us and go from there. I also wanted to comment about the dosing before we wrap up, because CBD dosing gets a lot of flack throughout the community these days because of just what you mentioned, Patrick, about the tinctures and how low dose they are. I'm really glad to know that you'll be exploring doses up to, 2,000, 3,000 milligrams or so, because a lot of CBD research has focused on lower doses for whatever reason, because of what ethics boards would approve or whatever. And I do expect you'll see very different outcomes in general going into those higher doses. And we have good reason to think they'll be safely tolerated as well. So I'm very excited to see that. But anyway, I'm going to end my rambling. I know I've kept you both a little over time, but I really, really appreciate you both taking the time to come on and start diving into. And we, of course, we have more to get into because every episode we do, it like opens up new boxes to start unpacking and to go into. But it's been really great to kind of expose our listeners to some of the science behind what's happening in the brain and throughout the body when these injuries occur, where this intersects with the endocannabinoid system, and all of the many different components of this research project that hope to gather data and start to tell that story. And I'm super excited to learn that you've got a paper coming. I'll definitely look forward to seeing that once it gets through peer review. That's going to be great. And
I think
we'll provide that for you, Jason, for sure. And absolutely. Certainly, if I can just sort of finish off, and I'd be remiss again, not for, thanking the NFL for getting this going and for being able to provide the funding. And again, as I mentioned, hopefully this trickle down effect to our kids. And then also, I had mentioned MyNext Health, who's going to be doing the genetic analyses and the metabolic aspects of gene regulation, what's going on there. And then finally, there's also another company who are providing our athletes with smoothies, a company by the name of Blender Bites. And nice. So they've got these pucks that they're going to be adding with their CBD isolate in our first study to use that. And they're using, whatever they can use as far as sort of fats involved as well, because fats are necessary, lipids are necessary in order to get the CBD in. So we're very thankful for Blender Bites as well and providing all of these fruit smoothie pucks for the athletes, and they love them, and so they're great. And then finally, I really have to thank my team. As we mentioned, the system doesn't operate in isolation, and nor can we as scientists really research in isolation to answer, I think, the questions that we'd like to answer. And so I'm really in debt to the 14 or 15 individuals that we have that are helping with this project.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's, and I think that the trickle down effect you mentioned, I do think that's going to be very real. I think, all of the data collected from all of this, I think it'll be very obvious, of course, to the scientific community and beyond, of how this can apply to, like you're saying, to kids, to service members in military, there's just all sorts of applications that can be spun off of just better understanding these dynamics in the body and what's going on. So, thank you for taking Elizabeth's comment seriously when she was thinking like, hey, maybe we ought to think about this project. This is also a great example of how a kind of simple idea, a little moment of inspiration can snowball into something much bigger than any one person and turn into something that's really, can drive a great benefit to our whole community as humans. So it's just inspiring in all sorts of ways. And of course the scientific nerd side of me just really geeks out on all of the mechanism talk and everything else like that. And I appreciate that this project has the education focus, because if we're not bridging that gap, then what good is it for this information to kind of just exist if we're not finding ways to communicate with athletes, their families, with medical practitioners and sports fans to better understand what's going on. And of course, beyond that, as you both know, education is a big thing that I'm passionate about. That's why I do this show. And not every research group takes that part seriously. How do we communicate this stuff to people? So thank you both for everything that you do. I definitely look forward to having you both on the show again as we continue to kind of unpack pieces of the research studies as they unfold. And I'm sure I'll have some more questions too about some of the underlying physiology and everything as we get deeper and exploring other topics. But as we close out, I'll give you both the floor to finish us out. If you have anything else left that you want to share with our listeners, let them know if there's any ways you want them to keep up with anything. Of course, we shared in the last episode, and we'll share this one as well, MaryJaneAthletics.com, and train with Mary Jane and keep up with Liz's stuff and the survey. Are those surveys still active right now?
They are. So that was going to be the one thing I was going to say.
Yes,
if you have any athletes, I'm going to plug them here. I'm doing a shameless plug for the, if any athletes that are current or retired that were either pro or elite level, university level athletes or medical training staff as well. There are some surveys that are trying to gather some information about the knowledge, opinions, and perspectives of both the athletes and the medical training staff in elite contact sports. So there are two survey links, one for athletes and one for medical training staff, and you can find them at MaryJaneAthletics.com or TrainWithMaryJane.com. And there's also a small Instagram page, just TrainWith.MaryJane, and you can find them there too.
Perfect. Awesome. Hopefully get some more folks discovering those links. And I'll put those in the show notes of this episode as well. And how long do you expect to collect responses for those, just in case people hear this episode later?
Oh, yeah. I hope to continue to gather them for another couple of months before I publish that data, but we will probably leave them open beyond the time that we shut them for my publications, just to continue to gather the information. So, so hopefully they'll still be there. And no matter when your people listen, because we'll continue to gather the information, because it's something that's just not looked at and it's not talked about. And we're really trying to get into the places that are, you know, underrepresented. So hopefully no matter when they're listening to it, they'll be there, because my focus really is to get this information to people. And I think athletes are a really good platform that brings together a lot of science, and it brings fans, and it brings medical training staff. It brings everybody together that are in a frame of mind that they want to understand more about their body. Weekend warriors, they want to understand their body too. Just people that want to go for a run or a hike, or you know, all the way to ultra marathoners or pro sports. So it's really, I think, an opportunity for to teach people. So that's what we're hoping.
Excellent. Patrick, as we wrap up, anything else you want to share before we close out?
Yeah, no, really nothing, Jason. I think that we've covered a lot today, and and I really appreciate you coming forward as well, and Elizabeth as well, and getting this whole series started. I think it's going to be very, very helpful for the community at large.
Excellent. Well, like I said before, thanks again for carving out the time and energy to pop on here and ramble with me and share all of this with our audience. I know that there are a lot of folks out there following this project and following the headlines around it. And I think this is going to be a great way to take advantage of the passion a lot of people have for sports and expose them to some really meaningful information and things that could change some lives. So again, I appreciate you both, and I'll talk to you again soon. And everyone listening, thanks so much for tuning in. And I'll share all of the information in the show notes in terms of links to find out more about the research project, the clinical trial IDs, links to the surveys, all of that sort of stuff. And until next time, stay curious and take it easy. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.